listening audience.
Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on your honor, on our honorable and noble listening audience. You're listening once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Imam Alfred, the host of Religion Means Alive, and we're waiting for Chairman Larry Ham of the People's Organization for Progress. And as soon as he arrives, we will have him on the show. Let me make some announcements to you. On Sunday, we will be at the Masjid Aqwa Sunnah to honor Dr. Tony El-Amin in a banquet. And I will be one of the speakers. It will be followed by an appearance we will have at the Ramadan session on June 10th in Hazelcrest, Illinois. The mosque here is the worldwide headquarters of Imam W.D. Muhammad's ministry, headed by his son, Imam Waruddin Muhammad II. We will then follow to be a guest at the National Lamas Cares Convention. And we're asking each and every one of you to attend these events. Is this Chairman Larry Ham?
Yes, it is. Good evening.
We're honored to have him. Now, he has commissioned the People's Organization for Progress to give a birthday party for me on July the 25th, 1947. I was born, but I know God brought me into the world for the purpose of freedom, justice, and equality. And they're going to have a march against police brutality. So I'm marching with them. I suspect very strongly that Mayor Ron Baraka will be with you. I know Amiri Baraka's spirit will be with us. And
absolutely,
I suspect that great W.E.B. Du Bois reincarnate, we don't believe reincarnate, but the spirit of W.E.B. Du Bois will be in Professor Cornel West, as will be Dr. King, as will be Minister Malcolm Shabazz. To welcome Chairman Larry Ham to Religion Means Alive, and
it's
give us an opening statement and tell us what's going
to
happen on my birthday.
On your birthday, July 25th, the People's Organization for Progress, together with many other community, labor, grassroots, and student organizations, and civil rights organizations from, and I hope from different parts of the country, will join together on Saturday, July 25th, and we will have what we're calling a Million People's March against police brutality, racial injustice, and economic inequality. And the march will begin at the Lincoln Monument at the intersection of West Market Street and Springfield Avenue at 12 o'clock noon on Saturday, July 25th. And we're going to march from there to the federal building, downtown Newark, and throughout Broad Street. And I hope there are going to be so many people that day that the entire business district will come to a standstill so that we can bring public attention to this really epidemic of police murder that's going on in the United States. The purpose of the march is, of course, to draw attention to police brutality, to demand that the murder of unarmed black people, men, women, and children, young and old, that police stop murdering unarmed black people, that they stop the use of excessive force. Just yesterday, I was doing a radio program in New York, and I was able to see a video of where the police brutalized a pregnant black woman. And I was sitting there saying to myself, in all of the 50 states of the United States of America, you would not see the police do this to a pregnant white woman. So we're marching to demand an end to the murder of unarmed black people, to demand an end to the use of excessive force, and to demand an end to the violation of people's constitutional rights. And we're marching to demand justice for the victims of police brutality. We could talk about Michael Brown in Ferguson. We could talk about Eric Garner in Staten Island. We could talk about Freddie Gray in Baltimore. But we don't have to go to those places because we have our own Michael Browns and Eric Garners and Freddie Grays right here in New Jersey. On July 25th, we're going to be marching to demand justice for Abdul Kamal, who was shot and killed. And they shot at him 15 times. They hit him 10 times. And all he had in his hand was a cell phone. We're going to march for justice for Kashad Ashford, who was shot 9 times in the head. How do you get shot 9 times in the head by state troopers and Lyndhurst police? And we're going to march for justice for Jerome Reed, who many people know about because there was a police dash cam video that went viral showing him getting out of the police car, getting out of his car, not the police car, getting out of his car unarmed, and police shooting him down in the street. So we're marching for justice for the victims of police brutality. We're marching for changes in the way policing is done and in the way the criminal justice system functions. And we're marching not just on the issue of police brutality, but we're marching about the root causes, because police brutality is really a manifestation of deeper problems. And at least two of the root problems are racial injustice and inequality and economic inequality. So we're going to draw out the interrelationship between police brutality, the struggle against police brutality, and the struggles around other issues, communities such as education, where they're closing down scores of schools and laying off hundreds of teachers in urban areas all over this state, with health care, where they're closing down hospitals in urban areas throughout this state. They've closed 3 hospitals already in Newark, and they're talking about closing a 4th. We're going to be talking about jobs. We have an astronomical rate of unemployment in Newark, with unemployment among black men in certain parts of the city being as high as 60%. We're going to march about poverty in Newark. 2/3 of the populations in urban areas throughout the state, not just Newark, but Newark and Elizabeth and Patterson and on and on and on, at least 2/3 of the population live at or below the poverty level. So we're going to be talking about many issues that are related to the issue of police brutality. So I'm calling upon everyone who can hear my voice, everyone who is listening to this wonderful program, Religion Means Alive, everyone to come out and join us on the 25th of March. What we need, the 25th of July, July 25th. And what we need people to do is go to the Million People's March Against Police Brutality Facebook page. If you're on Facebook, just brutality in the search engine, and it'll pull up that page for the march. And we want people to join that page. By joining, you're letting us know that you're going to the march. And then we want people not only to join themselves, but there's a way on that page, a little blue envelope. You just touch that with your finger, and all your friends on Facebook will come up. And then you can just punch the little dots next to each person's picture and invite all of your friends. They'll get an invitation. This page will invite all of your friends to the march. So,
brother Chairman, will you repeat that Facebook page for us?
Yes, yes. The Facebook page is the Million People's March.
Million People's March.
Right, Million People's March against police brutality. Now you gotta say against police brutality because there are other million people pages. Then you'd be surprised how many million pages there are. You know. So but make sure you put in against police brutality and that page
I see
will
it.
Come up.
Hosted, yes,
you
we got
it. Got it.
All right. Hosted by Sandra Haywood Public. Saturday,
that's
July
right.
25th, the birthday of Imam Alfred Muhammad at 12 noon.
That's
Lincoln
right.
Monument,
that's
New Jersey. Now, let
right.
me ask you this, Brother Chairman, if I
yes,
may
sir.
Call you that. Brother Chairman,
please,
is it
Imam.
Is there any symbolism in you starting at the Lincoln Monument? You could start at Military Park, but you decide to start at Lincoln Monument.
Well, there are really several reasons for this. First of all, the Lincoln Monument is a powerful symbol. And, Imam, you know that many of the marches that black people have had over the decades were at the Lincoln Monument in Washington. And
yes.
we know why. We know why. Because Lincoln was the president during the Civil War. And it was the Civil War, that very catastrophic Civil War, the greatest conflict that the United States was ever involved in. People don't know. More people died during the Civil War. More Americans died. More Americans died during the Civil War than Americans died in World Wars I, II, Korea, and Vietnam combined. Nearly a million, nearly 1 million. Now, I'm not even talking about the people who were wounded. That would be millions more. But nearly a million Confederate Army and from the Union Army. And the conflict was so intense that there were actually religious groups, Christian sects, that thought the Civil War was actually the apocalypse. They thought it was the end of the world. They had never seen conflict like this. And if you read the letters of some of the soldiers that wrote home to their people, they said they stood knee-deep in pools of blood. Because, you know, in certain battlefields like Gettysburg and Antietam, 25 and 30,000 men fell in a day. And this was before they had the terrible kinds of weapons that we have today. In fact, most of the guys didn't even have repeater rifles, even though the repeater rifle had been invented already, still using single-shot muskets. So a lot of that killing was hand-to-hand and with bayonets. You know, and of course with rifles and with pistols and with cannons. But Lincoln was the president, and the Civil War brought about the end of chattel slavery in the United States. So because of the March on Washington where Dr. King gave his tremendous speech in 1963, and because of all the other marches that have been there, we felt that rather than go to Washington to have this march, let's have it right in Newark since we have our own Lincoln Monument right here at Newark. So that's one reason. Then the other reason was lastly, the year before last, the People's Organization for Progress had a campaign of daily protests that lasted 381 days. We picked 381 days because that was the length of the Montgomery bus boycott. We wanted to have an action as long as the Montgomery bus boycott. So we had 381 consecutive days of protest for jobs, peace, equality, and justice at that Lincoln Monument. And there are other reasons, but those are two of the main reasons why we chose the Lincoln Monument.
Mr. Chairman, again, I thank you for the birthday present. I only way I celebrate birthdays, I put on the earth some 67-odd years ago, to work for our people. Now, I noticed that a very religious man and a very religious spot, my dear friend, one of my dearest friends, the Reverend Moses William Howard, you
yes.
were on the platform with him and Dr. Cornel West.
Yes.
Is there any symbolism that you were at Bethany Church, is also on Market Street, with the
yes.
Reverend Moses William Howard, revolutionary preacher, and Dr. Cornel West. Is there any connection between the two? In the city of Newark, y'all didn't do it on the steps of the Capitol in Washington. But if Newark, wherever Newark is going, wherever the world is going, Newark, it should be there first. And our good dear friend, Amiri Baraka, called it Newark. Tell us about that symbolism and your relationship to Professor West, as well as your relationship to Reverend Moses William Howard.
Well, there's a lot of connection. First of all, with Reverend Moses William Howard, catch that name, right? Moses. How many people you know named Moses? But he hardly used that. He put the initial M there, and he said Phil Howard.
He had to be a revolutionary preacher. When he was installed as the pastor of the Bethany Church, he brought an old ex-Baptist preacher from Lynchburg, Virginia, by the way of name of Imam Alfred Muhammad, to give the prayer. You know, and had a Muslim there. That was revolutionary. So I knew he was revolutionary. I knew him as the president of New York Theological Seminary. We have been friends. Somewhat explained. I hope he's listening now. But I hope that you can bring us together again. But I thought it was powerful. Yeah, he doesn't use the name Moses William Howard. But since I'm one of his closest friends, I know him as Moses William Howard. And I think it's a powerful name. That you would be with Moses William Howard, a great preacher. Also a friend of a mutual friend of mine, the Reverend Willie Ricks, was one of the civil rights stalwarts. I got my start really preaching in the civil rights movement. In Dr. Cornel West, a revolutionary that matters. He doesn't just talk religion. He talks about religion that matters. Make a comment on that, if you will.
Yes. Well, first of all, with regard to what Reverend Howard, Phil Howard, I have known him for, let me see now, what would be almost 30. I have known Bill Howard. I want to make sure. I don't want to tell a lie. 87, 97, oh, yes. Yes, I've known Reverend Howard for 38 years. I met him. We met at Princeton University. I was an undergraduate at that time, and he was at the seminary. He was at the Princeton Theological Seminary, and he lived at Princeton. And we were both in the anti-apartheid movement. Of course, he being a little bit older than I, he'd been in that anti-apartheid movement for a much longer period than I had, but he was aware of my activities on campus trying to get Princeton to divest some money from companies doing business with South Africa. And one day he just walked up to me and we started talking, and he invited me to his home for dinner and his lovely wife, Barbara. And we've been fast friends ever since, and we have walked many picket lines together. You know, many people don't know. They know Bill Howard is the pastor of Bethany Baptist Church, but many people are not aware of his history prior to that, that he is an international leader. He was president of the Reformed Churches of America, and he was also, I believe, president at one point of the National Council of Churches.
That's right. He went to Iran to negotiate to get the hostages out because he understood, studied Islam. I mean,
That's right.
Reverend Moses Weem, I love calling him Moses Weem, though he's referred to as Bill Howard. But I always see him as a Moses, is leading out backward preachers, backward Christians, and backward Muslims into the promised land of opportunity, of freedom, justice, and equality. And any man that would stand with Chairman Larry Ham has to be a revolutionary. Any man that would have Imam Alfred Muhammad even sitting in the back pew of his church, when some Muslim imams want to have me in that mosque. But I have a few revolutionary preachers who understand that Jesus Christ's gospel was a gospel of freeing the poor. So, you know, I want you to continue as you tell us more about your relationship with Dr. Cornel West And I hope that you'll come back on the show soon and bring Professor West for a few minutes so he can meet our audience.
Yes. Well, Cornel West, one of the institutional connections between all three of us, Reverend Howard and Dr. West and myself, is that we were all at Princeton University. And we were all there kind of simultaneously. I didn't really get to know Cornell while he was at Princeton. I got to know him later on, you know, he and I. In fact, we met through Reverend Howard. That's who brought us together. And so all three of us have been good friends ever since. And, you know, I'm just so indebted to Cornel West because, you know, he's an internationally renowned scholar. He's the author. Many people don't know. They think he just gives speeches, but he's the author of 19 books, you know, and he's a commanding. I would embarrass him if I mentioned, you know, the fees that he's paid to speak at the great universities all around the world. But he'll come to Newark, New Jersey and speak for free, you know, and speak at programs that we don't even charge people for because he wants people to have that information. So these two are what I would call liberation theologians. They believe, of course, in the gospel of Jesus Christ, but they believe in that not as a reified doctrine, but as a living doctrine to bring good news to the poor, you know, to free the captive, to feed the hungry, you know, to heal the sick and so forth, himself taught. And I've been blessed not just to know these men, but to be counted among their friends.
Really honored that to be counted. I hope I can join your friendship. I remember when we were removing Mr. Mark Newton, an urban terrorist, from the area, you sent assistance to us, and your comrades stood shoulder to shoulder with us as we helped pressurize an urban terrorist. You know, I'm not a socialist, but I do know the socialist teaching.
Uh-huh.
And Karl Marx did say that the lumpen proletariat is basically a parasite on the working class. And we got that lumpen out of there. I don't know where African Americans have come to romanticize the lumpen proletariat. Every revolution I've studied, including Jesus Christ and Muhammad, they didn't have much good things to say about the lumpen. All they could demand of the lumpen that he reforms. He's the one that robs and pilfers our people. He's the one that resides in the police department and beat them up and protect them from the ruling class. Now, I'm using that language. My language is not that language, but I do know that language. Which brings us around to another fact, that you have stood, and I was ill last Wednesday, otherwise I would have stood at the Bethany Church when you all had the press conference. I wanted to be there, but help was, one of your people is assisting me, and I wanted to just make a commercial plug, that those of you who wish to assist me can go to Imam Alfred Muhammad Prostate Cancer Fund, GoFundMe. It's a donation. We do need a donation because we're paying for this out of pocket. These health insurance companies won't pay for alternative medicine. If I won't burn cancer out, if I won't use chemicals that are going to kill me, and I'm not knocking, I'm not out of physicians, I'm not arguing that. Or it's surgery. I'm telling people they got cancer, get the treatment that you think is best for you. I've decided on alternative, and I'm under the care of a physician. But it's costing me out of my pocket about $1,800 a month. Because this physician, he's a very revolutionary physician. I'm not going to name him on the air. I don't want the American Medical Association to come after him. But he's been treating me with some treatments that's helping me phenomenally. I'm struggling.
Glad to hear that, brother.
And I'm going to be with you all. I'm going to be with one of you other people, the Pickett Wells Fargo Bank. I tell you, it didn't take that out of me. I'm going to be on my birthday, God willing, July the 25th, 2015, on my 68th birthday.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to stand with you and everybody. I actually may slip into the front of the line. I'm a pretty aggressive guy since I survived Lynchburg, Virginia, and I'm surviving prostate cancer. I want to stand and say I'm going to be one of the first Muslim imams.
That's right.
You're going to be something other than a pork chop. Oh, wow, I couldn't say that. Bean pie. Albert Murray, the great intellectual writer, called. He said, you know, the problem with you black preachers, you're always ingratiating yourself, whether you've got a pork chop in your mouth or a bean pie in your hands. So I don't want to be one of them bean pie spouting Muslim imams or ministers that is not out here with our people. Now, I'm going to probably double back earlier that morning. I'm going to spank the lumpen proletariat that's killing each other. But we have to be against injustices wherever it is, under
that's
the color
right.
of law, under the
that's
color
right.
of a pistol being stuck in one of our faces.
Yeah.
But I'm going to let you fight that fight, and you're going to be my leader. See, this is how we have to work. Dr. King and Ahmad Muhammad, Dr. King and Minister Malcolm, we work together. We may work the other sides of the fence, but both of us working towards the property
the
of freedom,
thing.
Justice, and equality for our people. Now, I want to
that's
stop
right.
here and talk about one of our comrades.
Yes.
Who has fallen.
Hello? Well?
I'm, please forgive me. But I wanted to bring back Mumia. And I think that this is something. Excuse me, let me get in the quiet zone.
Uh-huh.
Keep talking, brother. Chairman, one of my children that went off here and stopped cooking and stopped watching the food. And I'm, but
that's
I wanted to ask
smoke
you about this mirror, Jamal, and how is his condition and what we can do to help him, because we should stand with our
absolutely.
Brothers, when they are in struggle.
Right. Right. Well, what people should do, they need to call the prison warden, and they need to call the head, and it's unfortunate. I need to have those numbers at hand so that when I'm asked again, I can give the numbers out. But if people go to the, if they Google the Free Mumia Coalition, they will be able to go to the website that can give them the name and numbers of people that they need to call. Mumia is gravely ill. Somehow, the state is obliged to give prisoners regular medical checkups. And somehow, after being in prison for 32 years, Mumia developed diabetes, and none of the medical people knew about it. Not only did he develop diabetes, but he went into diabetic shock and almost died, went into a diabetic coma and almost died. And not only does he have diabetes, but it compounded by some other afflictions that have caused serious lesions in his skin and cracking. He's just in terrible shape. And the prison will not permit people who Mumia's family and advisors have selected to go in and examine him and give them treatment. So what they're asking people outside the walls to do at this time is to contact the prison authorities and demand that Mumia's specialist, his own specialist, examine and diagnose him and prescribe the proper medical care and medicines for him, because obviously it's not being done by the prison medical facilities. And many people believe that this really is a tacit form of execution, that this is execution by neglect. You know, since the court said we can't electrocute you, can't give you the death sentence, then we just going to let you get sick and die. And it's going to look like natural causes or from illness. But it's really, it's death by neglect because the prison refused to properly diagnose him. He should have been diagnosed. I know when I went to see Mumia, I don't know if Mom, if you knew or not, that I had actually gone into the prison and visited
Mumia. I was aware that as you, I would expect you, if I was locked up, you're not one of these Christians that sing songs or Muslims that make prayers or chant. You're too busy living religion. That's why we have you on Religion Means a Lot. So I am aware that I would expect that your brother fell ill to police brutality, a forced ill, that was put in jail in the freedom struggle. You're going to come and visit me. Isn't that right?
That's right. That's right. That's right. I mean, I have been into a number of prisons. I mean, and that's a whole other show. Don't get me started on the prisons.
Yeah, we're gonna have you back.
Yeah.
All that we're working now to get Michelle Alexander, and I really want to invite you from time to time to be the guest host on this show if you will accept.
Oh yes,
yeah.
I would be glad.
Because religion means a lot. We're not here trying to convert people. We're here to really witness the power of the people being organized for progress.
Right.
If we're organized for progress, that's to me what religion should be. That's what it should be about, liberation. If it's
that's
not,
right.
It's about enslaving. And I do agree with Mr. Marx that if it's an opiate, if it's just to put people to sleep and sing lullabies and make me feel good, it's an opiate. And I'm not for an opiate because I'm against drugs of any form.
All right, Reverend.
Tell us again how one can get in touch with Larry Ham, Chairman Larry Ham, and the People's Organization for Progress, where your meetings are being held. How much more time can you stay with us, Brother Chairman?
Say again?
How much more time can you spend with us today?
Oh, I got all the time you want.
All right, well, we're going to stay on it because we're going to take some calls. I hope some of your congress will call in. While they're getting ready to call in, 805-727-7012. Why don't you give us about 5 minutes? You can speak because I've been a recipient of your speeches. You have one of the best speaker systems in the United States of America. And I saw you speak up in Paterson, New Jersey. What I like about you, you are not an itinerant organizer. You're the most organizers, I don't want to name some of them, they travel all over the United States. But you can't find them in their own damn neighborhoods.
Right.
You've heard them protesting police brutality in South Africa, but they won't protest police brutality in their own cities. So I like them. But tell us about the People's Organization for Progress. And I want you to devote about 10 minutes to that. And I know you're quite capable of devoting 10 hours, if necessary, but the People's Organization for Progress.
Well, I just take a few minutes and say that the People's Organization for Progress is an all-volunteer grassroots organization. We work for racial, social, economic justice, and peace. POP is about 33 years old. It was founded in 1983. We adopted our constitution in August of 1983, and we have been on the battlefield ever since, sometimes bigger, sometimes smaller, you know, but we keep the flag raised, and we've been on the battlefield. We're a multi-issue organization. We don't deal to us. We've been involved in the struggle around schools. We've been involved in the struggle around hospitals, keep them closed hospitals. We've been involved in the struggle for jobs at a living wage. We've been involved in struggles against a war and struggling for peace. You know, housing, health care, education, employment, all of these issues. Issues that we've been involved with at one time or another. We meet every week, and the reason we meet every week is because And I know people might not believe this, but Imam, we meet once a week because of a poem. Can you believe that? We meet once a week because of a poem. And that poem was titled African Revolution, and it was written by Mary Baraka. He wrote that poem around 1972, and it's a great poem. It's one of Baraka's epic poems. The poem is like 4 or 5 pages long. And there's a line in that poem where Baraka says, black people all over the world meet once a week. Black people all over the world meet once a week. And from that line, we were inspired meetings, and we've been meeting every week from the time that we adopted our Constitution. And we meet now at the Abyssinian Baptist Church in Newark. POP is not a religious organization. We're a secular organization. We open to all people of all faith, people without faith. You know, we open to all people. And the church is a very generous and gracious church. Abyssinia opened its doors to us about a dozen years ago, about 12 years ago, we started meeting at Abyssinia. And we've been meeting there ever since. We meet every Thursday at 6:30 at Abyssinia. Abyssinia is located at 224 West Kenny Street in Newark. That's West Kenny between Prince and Broome streets. And if people want to know more about the People's Organization for Progress, they can go to the People's Organization for Progress website, which is www.njpop.org, www.njpop.org. You can go to our website and see a lot of our past activities. And if you need to reach us, you can always call me. Contact the People's Organization for Progress at 973-801-0001. 973-801-0001. And anybody can join. Our membership is open to the general public. Our dues are only $25 for an entire year. And we look forward to folks who want to be in the fight for justice to come on and join us. We only got one requirement to join POP, and that is, do you want justice? If you want justice, then join the People's Organization for Progress.
I got to get my $25. I've been to one of your meetings. I think I'm going to join. Because you know what? We should be a part of the organization. One of my things that I've been really against Muslims is only waiting for another person called to be a cause of their own.
Uh-huh.
That's what we have to stop. There's a verse in the Quran that says, have you seen him who belied the religion? He's seen praying, but he's not even taking care of the neighborly needs. He forget the orphans.
Right.
And African Americans
right.
are orphans. And he forget
right.
the widows. And our people are widows. What about those
right.
African American women that have lost their husbands to police brutality? Some think because I got two whips. One whip I have for the African-American, then I got a whip for the establishment. So I pull both of them. I like Zorro. I don't know what you're too young to remember Zorro. But I pulled two whips out. And
well,
I heard a brother said, you were on a program with Imam Muhammad. He said, I wish I had a brother like this. If I had 50 brothers, if I had two brothers with me like Chairman Larry Ham, we're going to join forces, Brother Larry. We're going to help clean up police with that. We're going to help clean up our neighborhoods. That's what
right.
we need.
Clean
we need
up.
That spirit.
That's right.
A spirit to stop talking and a spirit of action. Organize.
Well, I know very little about the Quran. I wish I could quote it, but I do know a little something, and I have to be honest. I'm not a very what people would call religious person. I don't belong to a particular church, but I can read, and I've read that book called The Bible, and I know that in Matthew, well, actually in all four of the Gospels, you know, Jesus said that inasmuch as ye do it unto the least of these, my brethren, ye do it unto me. When I was hungry, ye fed me not. When I was naked, ye visited me not. When I was naked, ye clothed me not. When I was in prison, ye visited me not. Therefore, you not fit to enter the kingdom of heaven. Jesus was very much concerned about people's earthly existence, as he was also about the salvation of their soul. You know, it's very interesting. In one place in the Bible, in the New Testament, Jesus said, I leave you two new commandments. Now, anyone that knows anything about Judaism knows that they got a lot of commandments. It's not just 10 commandments of Deuteronomy. These are commandments, you know, the statutes, the laws that they were supposed to follow. And if they failed to follow them, there were great penalties for both man and God. But Jesus said, I leave you two new commandments, just two. He said, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and to love your neighbor as you love yourself. And then, you know, Jesus said something behind that. He said, on thee, hang all the laws of the prophets. He didn't say on these hang the Ten Commandments. He said, on these two hang all the laws of the prophets, to love God and to love your neighbor, to treat your neighbor as you would treat yourself. And it may sound oversimplistic, but I'm telling you, if people abided by those two commandments, I think we'd be in better shape than we are today as human beings.
I know you got it right, because that's the same scripture I read, and the Quran gives it pretty clear. I would invite you to read it, because Karl Marx, and a letter to Ingalls, says that Muhammad had overthrown the ruling class in Mecca and the area surrounding that. That was his teaching. But all of the prophets and messengers of God, that's what they brought. That message was for the downtrodden. It was
for
the weak, the hungry, the out of doors. And really, they were against the Satan, ain't nothing but the ruling class. We need to smash them and empower human beings. So we're on the same page. We probably in the same paragraph, the same sentence. I would ask you to remember, and I wish the next time, I hope you'll come on again, and I'd like for you to bring some of the people, I won't say the victims, but the victors, because they can never destroy a spirit of goodness, but they may destroy the physical body. I'd like to have you to come on with some of the people named for us and tell us something about those persons, or the many persons that you named that were. I only thing I'm going to have to do is differ with you, Brother Chairman. It's not an epidemic. It's a pandemic of police murders.
I would agree with that. Pandemic is even better than epidemic. Some of the families that we've dealt with over the years. It's funny you should ask me about this, because just today, one of the families that really transformed the People's Organization for Progress sent me a picture on Facebook today of their family, and that's the Williams Faison family. And back in 1999, there was a young man named Earl Faison going to visit his children, and he was stopped by the police. And within 45 minutes of being stopped by the police, he was dead. And the police said he died mysteriously. They don't know. They actually wrote in a report that he fell off the chair and died. You know, but as a result, family who wanted justice and who was not going to be deterred from justice, and as a result of that family, with its determination, combining with the People's Organization for Progress and its determination. determination after a four-year struggle. Five officers, the first time ever in the history of New Jersey, went to jail simultaneously in connection with a police brutality case, because these officers, according to the U.S. attorney, after the state of New Jersey would not even investigate the case. See, this is how the criminal justice system works. The state attorney general wouldn't even investigate, wouldn't even convene a grand jury. And what happened, we demanded a federal investigation, and the U.S. attorney took it up. And after a year, he had a press conference, and he said that Earl Faison died in a stairwell of torture, that they tortured this man to death. And we campaigned. So I got a letter from their family today. And the stepmother is still here, and the father is still here. The father was so strained by the struggle to get justice for his son that he fell ill. And one illness led to another, and eventually he ended up having a leg amputated. And his mother was so oppressed by the weight of the fight that his mother died almost to the day that he died. His mother died. He died. He was killed on April the 11th. A year later, his mother died, practically of a broken heart. She died, I believe, on the 12th, a day after the anniversary of his death. But that family went through so much. But as a result of their persistence, they were able to get justice for their son. And I hope that you'll be able to interview on your show the mother of Abdul Kamal, Michelle Kamal. She's a very strong woman. 15 years after the Faison incident, she reminds me so much of the Faison family, because she's so strong and refuses. She's very deeply religious, too, a deeply religious woman, but she's very strong and very determined to get justice. And the mother of Jerome Reed and the mother of Kashad Ashford, you know, it's something. Sometimes when we have these pop meetings, brother, sorority of mothers whose sons have been killed by the police, they all be there at the same time, you know, and it's really something. It's something to behold, you know. It's something. In one sense, I'm honored that they would come to me to ask POP, People's Organization for Progress, for help. But on the other hand, it just breaks my heart. I mean, sometimes I don't know how much I can take, because week after week, the oppressed come into our meeting. You know, some come with police brutality. Some come with evictions. I mean, one time we had to go and actually sit in front of a home that was foreclosed on, and the sheriff had come to put an 80-year-old grandmother out of, you know, we refused. And, you know, we sat down and we prevented the foreclosure from taking place for a whole year, although eventually, you know, the grandmother did have to leave. But at least, you know, on one day, people stood together, and we faced off with the police. And they withdrew and let us stay there for a year longer, you know. It's just one thing after another, you know. And, you know, it could be it could be a lot, you know, to have to bear. But we're glad that people think enough of our organization that they would come to us, you know, and could go to. And sometimes we direct them to, but they, week after week, you know, we don't have a shingle, we don't do no advertisements, there's no People's Organization for Progress is not in the yellow pages, we don't have no billboards, we don't have no commercials, but somehow people find out and they come to POP for help, and we try to help them to help themselves. We don't just...
Now, are you exclusively for New Jersey?
No, we have 11 branches of POP. 9 of them are in New Jersey. 1 of them is in New York City. and one is in North Carolina. And we've had requests from other places to establish branches, and ultimately we will. There's some, you know, there's some internal strengthening we have to do before we are ready to really go out nationally, because, you know, that's a whole nother, you know, big job.
I know. But you know what I like? You do mostly work in your area. And like I said, right. We have people going to Ferguson, going to Baltimore. Yeah, I don't know. You probably know my background. I used to be the imam in Baltimore. I didn't even go there because I'm busy working in New Jersey where I live at, and in New York where I work and do my work. So, you know, I think people just stretch themselves thin. One of my critiques of the civil rights movement and sometimes our itinerant preachers / civil rights people is they go in and they overlook the local leaders.
That's right.
And you're on the campaign. I believe you do a demonstration every Saturday. Would you tell our audience about that?
Yes. Well, we have what we call our street recruitment team. They go out every Saturday on Broad Market, led by a young man named Stephen Hatcher, who I can remember when Steve first joined POP. He first joined POP when we were meeting down at the Newark Public Library. We used to meet there every Thursday. And Steve was so quiet, he would sit in the back of the room, and he wouldn't say a word. But he had come to POP because he was outraged by the murder of Amadou Diallo, who was shot at 41 times. And but Steve just, you know, kept moving forward. Now he's one of the most outstanding leaders in People's Organizational Progress. He's the head of the Plainfield branch. But he comes up every Saturday to do the street corner recruitment on Broad Market. And you see them out there every Saturday. They're on the mic, on the loudspeaker, you know, in a manner of speaking. Don't hate me for using the word, but they'd be evangelizing essentially about the People's Organization for Progress, and what POP is doing, and why people should join POP, and so on and so forth. And they've been on fire the last couple of weeks. Last week they recruited 52 people out there, you know, on last Saturday, and I'm very, very proud of them. It gets dicey out there sometimes, because as you said, the lumpy proletariat, they be out there. You know, one of the big problems we have in the black community, very people talk about, is mental illness. You know, and folks be walking, you know, Ronald Reagan cut off funds for the mentally disabled, that forced the closure of many facilities for the mentally disabled. And now a lot of those people are homeless and on the street because of the great president, Ronald Reagan. And so sometimes we come into contact with these folks on Broad Market, and it's just kind of dicey. But new members, as a result of our folks who are out there on the corner every Saturday on that loudspeaker, talking about the issues of the day. You know, it looks and sounds like a demonstration, but they're not just demonstrating; they're out there trying to recruit new members for POP.
I'm going to tell you something, brother Chairman. I think one of the ways to overcome mental illness, I'm not telling people to not take medicine. They should.
Right.
But if you're involved in social struggle, it helps to abate illness. If you're involved in social struggle, it helps you to not focus on your limited problems, but to focus on other problems. I mean, if you got a substance abuse problem, join a picket line, join an organization, organize somebody, organize yourself. You know, I was an alienated little boy down in Lynchburg, Virginia, and I got involved and organized against segregation and all the mistreatment that we had, of course, being from Lynchburg. you know, but it began to change my life.
Wow.
You know, that I was involved, I'd been a young childhood preacher, and due to the discrimination by African Americans in the church against people who looked a certain way. You know, if you weren't from the right family, we can't forget about the classism that's in our community, the colorism that's in our community. These are facts
that
we need to address. You know, if you had a father, you had a sister that had a illegitimate child back in the days when I was coming along, you were isolated. So it was a civil rights movement. Willie Ricks and others invited me to come to the pulpit, and I preached, I ain't going to let nobody turn me around. Keep on marching, keep on walking, marching up the Freedom Way. And you know, all that they woke up with my mind stayed on freedom. And you know what, I was almost ready to call you Reverend. But you know what, Brother Chairman? I ain't never left that spirit. I wake up every day with prostate cancer, and I say, I ain't going to let nothing turn me around. I'm going to stay in the struggle until our people are free.
Yes.
You know, if Mumia is in jail, we have others in jail for right to struggle, we should stand with them in spirit. See, that doesn't mean we're going to have 100% agreement. We have to have a united front against evil and wrongdoings. And we become a stronger people as this country teeters towards collapse. Because believe you me, with the corruption, it cannot continue this way. There's something got to give. So I didn't mean to preach. You know, I don't like going to anybody's show and then they end up preaching to you. A lot of talk show hosts around there, that's all they do. I want you to reemphasize for our audience. And anybody that may be on Facebook, I mean, may be on the air, you can listen to this broadcast again, and I hope you'll put it on your website. And that they can go to www.blogtalkradio.com and put in the date, and they can listen to this broadcast and tell 10 people to tell 10 people. And this way we have thousands of people to come to the Million March Against Police Brutality, going to be held on my birthday. July 25th, Larry, Ham, and the Pop will celebrate my birthday. I'm going to make it a birthday celebration, too, because we're having a three-day affair. We didn't know about your affair. We're having a three-day affair in Weekway Park. New African Family Day. Friday, we're going to have Juma. I may be the one, the speaker. The Juma prayer, I'd like to invite you out. Saturday, we're going to have a conference. But we're gonna first join you. We're gonna join you in your march. We're gonna put I may have my Stacey Adams or my preacher shoes, but I may have to put a pair of sneakers on. They won't be out Jordan, I guarantee you. And we're gonna walk.
I hear you, brother.
Keep on walking, marching up the Freedom Way. So tell us again about the March Against Police Brutality to be held on at the Lincoln Memorial on. I believe it's going to be Broad and Market.
The Lincoln Memorial, the Lincoln Monument is located.
On Springfield Avenue. See, I'm not a Jerseyan.
Right. It's right across from, that's in front of the old courthouse, the old Essex County Courthouse. And it's situated right where West Market Street and Springfield Avenue come together. You know, they both come down the hill and then they two streets meet right there. At University Place, so to speak, at University Avenue. And the march will start there at 12 noon on Saturday, July 25th. And we want everybody to be there. In fact, don't wait till 12 o'clock. Get there early, you know, so you can get toward the front of the line where Imam Muhammad is going to be. And you'll be all right.
Yeah, we're gonna be there. Now, what kind of shoes should we wear?
I'm gonna have to
chairman
now.
I said, what kind of shoes should we wear?
Oh, you better wear some comfortable shoes. Don't come in there with no alligator shoes or no hot July day.
And please don't support Jordans and his oppression, right? So don't come with no Jordans
That's
either.
Right.
You go down to the 99-cent store and get you some shoes and walk with us.
That's right. Get you some comfortable shoes.
Is Professor West intending to come?
Yes. Yes. In fact, he said to me, at first he said he didn't think he was going to make it, but when he was with us for the press conference the other day, he said he's going to try to make it. He said he's going to try to make it. That man is in such demand. I don't know how he keeps his schedule up. I don't know.
But you know what I like? He's loyal to Dr. Howard, Moses William Howard, and to you. He hasn't forgotten his friends. He won't be like, which I'm going to bring up something that's rather controversial.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you will. I'm going to talk to you in private. I hope we can have Dr. West on the show if it's no more than 15 minutes.
Right.
I want to ask you, what do you make of Dr. West and the Reverend Michael Eric Dyson's debacle? And it's really, I thought it was a very vicious attack in light of the fact that Professor West has stood up for the Palestinians. He stood up.
Right.
He's not a closet intellectual hiding somewhere.
Right.
He's not an armchair pundit, you know, that you
right.
can't even reach out to, that won't even
right.
talk to you. Just tell us, before we get into that, you know, this is a character. I know you're approachable. I know you are
right.
from Newark. You haven't changed your ways. You know, a lot of us go and you go to the fine institutions of, and we just forget our people. But just, what do you make of this debacle between West?
Right.
I would say basically instigated by
right.
a Reverend
right.
Dr.
Dyson,
which you probably also know, Reverend Dr.
Michael Dyson.
Dyson.
Right. Well, I'm going to say a word about this, and then I'm going to have to go, Imam. I really have to go now. But I think it was very unfortunate that they had this argument, and I really think it was instigated by Dyson. He wrote a 10,000-word, attack on Dr. West, you know, which I think was totally unwarranted. I haven't talked to Dyson about it. I've met Dyson.
You know, Professor Reverend Dr. Michael, Professor Michael Eric Dyson. So I like to call people by that title.
Right.
A lot of us are very brutal and slaughtering each other's images.
Right.
And I thought it was
right.
an ad hominem attack. And I know you got to go in a few minutes, but before you go, will you return again on Religion Means Alive?
Absolutely, absolutely. I'll be back. You know, as soon as possible. You know, as soon as you want me
I'm
to come
hold
back.
You to it before my birthday. See, you know, Negroes don't mind you coming up on
back.
That birthday party.
I got
to be at the birthday
back.
Party, but I want to talk to you before. I want to talk to you. We'll have you on again. But quickly tell us, I know you have to go, tell us more
yeah.
about this, West. Professor West.
One thing I've noticed is things have quieted down. It was really out there. And the reason I think it's quieted down is because Dr. West really didn't play into it. He made one brief statement about it, and he hasn't said anything else about it since. And, you know, you can't carry out an argument by yourself. You got to have two people to make an argument, you know. So because he refused to really spend a lot of time on it, it seems to have petered out. So to speak. So, but I'm not surprised. These things happen. You know, I'm not going to try to speak for Michael Eric Dyson. You know, he's another fellow Princetonian, by the way. You know, we all went to school together, you know. And, I could say some things, but it would be purely speculative. And I don't really want to say anything unless I can defend it. I'll just say that I think it was unfortunate that I think if Dyson had that much of a beef, he should have sat down with Dr. West and that, you know, they should have worked it out, you know, worked it out.
We've seen this happen before among us, and the only people that benefit from it is our oppressors.
That's what
we should understand, you know. I mean,
that's right.
We've seen it
that's
with
right.
it just, we just see too much of it. It's just nothing but another street blood fest coming under the guise of intellectual stuff, but it's nothing but a high form of playing the dozens. Your
that's
mama
right.
wore combat boots. That's all it is.
Imam, I'm going to have to say, I'm Lakem.
Well, Lakem Aswami, thank you, Brother Larry Ham of the People's Organization of Progress. We will have him on the game. Please go to Facebook, Million March Against Police Brutality. With Larry
yes,
Ham.
Sir.
If you'd like to join the conversation, thank you, Brother Larry, Brother
thank
Chairman.
You.
If
bye-bye.
You'd like to join the conversation, you'd like making comments, we're going to be on the air for a few more minutes, 805-727-7013. You can tell us what you think, tell us what you agree with, what you disagree with. 805-727-7013. We're speaking with, Brother Larry Ham of the People's Organization for Progress. I just want to remind our audience that you can send your donations to the Imam Alfred Muhammad Prostate Cancer Fund, GoFundMe. We need your donations. We're trying to raise $23,000 so we can fight prostate cancer. Those of you who like to send donations to our ministry can send it to us. Imam Alfred Muhammad, 817 Jackson Avenue, Linden, New Jersey, 0736. If there anybody would like to make comments, feel free to dial 805-727-701. Thank you. Peace be on our honorable and noble listening audience. You've listened once again to another edition of Religion Means a Lot.